MoneyWeb now on the money.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Trading with John Bilton, head of global multi-asset strategy at JP Morgan Asset Management. John, appreciate the time. You guys just completed the 26th annual edition of the JP Morgan Asset Management Long-Term Capital Market Assumptions. Can you give us a short overview of what the research is designed to achieve and what the key findings were looking ahead to 2022?
Yeah, of course, and thanks for having me on this. So, yes, you're right, it's our 26th annual edition, something that as an organization we're immensely proud of. We've titled this year's long-term capital market assumptions, Fading Scars, Enduring Policies, and that really captures the ethos of what we've been looking at. If we go back 2 years at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, we were all concerned about long-term economic scarring, damaging the potential growth rate of the economy. And we were expecting to see significant bankruptcies and layoffs that would really reduce productive capacity. And that's not the legacy of the pandemic. Instead, what we've seen is that the tools and the policies brought in, both fiscal and monetary, to prevent that outcome is actually what the legacy of the pandemic is going to be. And we actually think that for the next 10 to 15 years, we're going to face a substantial period with significant policy support. So the world we had previously, where we had just monetary policy pushing, we didn't have significant capex or fiscal spending cycles, and we had something of a lopsided economy, is now behind us. Going forward, a little bit more inflation risk. We do face a situation where bond returns are likely to be negative in real terms for G4 sovereigns throughout much of our forecast horizon. We see a lot of potential in terms of returns from equities because we do think this is a decent growth environment. And of course, we have to widen our opportunity set if we are to get towards being able to deliver the type of returns that we've seen historically.
I take your point on that. The supportive accommodative policies, the responses that prevented that economic fall down. What do you expect from central bank tapering programs and a potential impact on asset classes?
Well, I mean, the tapering obviously is a near-term issue with regard to where we are today. And we do expect to see tapering across all of the major central banks in the next year or so because we have been operating with very accommodative policy. So think of this as normalization rather than a tightening. But make no mistake, we expect central bank balance sheets to remain a significant force throughout the next 10 to 15 years. We're not expecting to see a major shrinkage at any time. So how do we actually think about it from asset markets today? Well, I think first and foremost, if we take the short term, the market has absorbed the idea of tapering without having the kind of taper tantrum that we saw back in 2013.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually been relatively well telegraphed. It's arguable that the central banks have learned from prior experiences and actually have run this a lot more smoothly. But it also indicates what we can expect from central banks. We think that monetary policy and decisions are going to be telegraphed a lot more in advance. We think that balance sheets will matter at least as much as front-end rate policy. But remember, even if we see tapering, we are going to still be in a world where interest rates, both short and long-term, are likely to be below prevailing inflation rates. And that means a world where real returns will be negative for bonds. That, of course, if you're a bondholder, means that you've got to think very carefully about those fixed income holdings. But if you're holding another asset, whether it be equities or alternatives, your discounting rates actually support your forward cash flows. And that's the reason why, despite some of the near-term noise we may see around tapering, we actually think that the environment continues to be very supportive.
You mentioned those economic scars created by the pandemic and then not being as severe as forecasters had expected, growth returning in developed markets. How would you describe the impact on emerging markets in the short and longer term, and particularly once the commodity cycle ends?
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things we've got to think about. Let's bring it back to the commodity cycle. Is the commodity cycle ending? We've obviously seen a very significant jump in terms of commodity indices over the past couple of years as we've seen the goods market really pick up significantly and a lot of activity there. But we do think from our numbers that commodities are going to continue to beat their benchmark, which is global inflation, which implies that there's further upside, albeit less in terms of magnitude than we've seen in the past for commodities. So they should be well supported. Also, it's worth bearing in mind that as we move towards a new green future, you know, renewable and sustainable infrastructure doesn't build itself. So there will be near-term demand for commodities. So calling the halt to a commodity cycle, it might be a little bit premature. How does that translate back to emerging markets? Well, the thing to remember is the emerging markets are a very different animal today than they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's less commodity dependent. Obviously, there are pockets, you know, South Africa, of course, being one of them, Brazil, etc. But by and large, the emerging markets in equity market terms are dominated by places like China, India, Taiwan, Korea. And the index makeup in these places is much more developed market-like, big tech sector, increasing exposure to consumers. So where do we stand on emerging markets? Well, emerging market growth is still above developed market growth because there's more of a pickup back towards the technological frontier, we feel. So there is a reason to expect EM to be growing more rapidly than DM, but the differential is lower than it was in the past. But the returns are potentially still there, but we have to recognize that the indices themselves are rather different today.
I take your point on that. In your view, for last question, to get strong real returns, what does an optimal global diversified portfolio look like compared to that historic 60-40 equity bond?
Well, at the end of the day, this is part of the issue. So if you go back 10 years, if you look at the last rolling 10-year return of global equities and U.S. aggregate bonds, you know, you were picking up 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
And we're simply not going to see that going forward. So to earn the same amount of return, you have to do something different. There's no two ways about it. You're going to have to take more risk. And the thing that we would argue is that because bond yields are so low, you're not getting a return from your fixed income component. So while it's still important to have bonds in a portfolio, what you can't do is rely on them to give you a reasonable return. So you're putting a lot more risk on equities. You're also looking at using diversification. What other assets give you different moments of risk, whether it be illiquidity risk, international risk, etc., and building that in. So going forward, we can achieve reasonable returns, but we have to think, number one, about using illiquidity, so real estate, real assets, private equity, etc., as well as your public markets. We have to think, number two, about international. Most investors around the globe have something of a home bias, but there's a lot to play for if you look more widely across the globe. And then number three, I think we have to be a little more active because remember, the returns we suggest, and at the moment we're seeing a little over 4% expected return on a US dollar 60-40. Mm-hmm. Those returns are just the baseline. That's what you get if you buy the market, but you don't take any active or cycle-aware decisions. So taking some of those active decisions is the final part that we think is important in being able to plan and manage to generate higher returns.
We'll leave it there. That's John Bilton, Head of Global Multi-Asset Strategy, JP Morgan Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.